So my first question to you, Kurt, just in general, can you comment on the recent reports that a trucker shortage is partially to blame for the rising gas prices we should anticipate this summer?
Well, you know, I will validate that somewhat in saying that the trucker shortage is probably going to be responsible for a whole host of things as far as cost increase this summer. I'm not so sure that it directly ties into the fuel piece of it, though it would be a valid contributor to the scenario. But the reality of the situation is our industry as a whole, as you just mentioned, is facing this shortage. We've been facing it for quite some time, but new government regulations over the course of the last, you know, year or two are really slimming down the candidate pool. And add to that what's historically just a business or a job that has a, you know, unfair stigma about it. All of these things adding up as one have created this scenario where we don't have the capability to improve or increase our driver headcount. Now add to that the fact that, you know, put in line COVID and everything else, the consumer market has only increased over this time, whether that be through retail or through e-commerce. People are just buying things left and right. And so that then creates the perfect storm. So what happens? You know, whoever pays more for transportation services is going to get the capacity. And if they're paying more for it, then you can imagine that they're rolling that cost down into the price of their product or the product that they sell.
For your business, for G&D specifically, what is it looking like for you? What does your roster look like this year compared to, say, pre-COVID?
So our roster is fairly strong, but I can say that we have not had very good success at adding to our headcount here at G&D. You know, this is a prime market in any other scenario where we should be able to take advantage of the opportunity to grow. I mean, we should be adding heads, we should be buying new trucks and adding new trailers and increasing our client, our client pool. But from our perspective, we're not able to do that. So what are we able to do? We're able to keep managing our existing customer base. There has been, unfortunately, there is some pruning of businesses that didn't necessarily make sense to ensure that, our regular and long-term and high-volume customers are taken care of. That's been just an unfortunate thing that happens in this market. But our headcount has not it's not decreased, but we would rather take advantage of this by majorly increasing our overall census of drivers, and that's not been something we've been able to do, and I don't think a lot of other carriers have either.
Kurt, you mentioned many different factors that you attribute this shortage to across the nation, one of them being the stigma of the business, of the profession. Can you expand upon that a little bit? Why now? Because that stigma has been around for quite some time. So why is that all of a sudden hitting so hard?
Well, I think the biggest thing is it boils down to the age of the driving force. Number one, you've got gentlemen and women and gentlemen, I'm sorry, that do this for a living. They've done it for a long time, but they are, you know, they're reaching that, 55, 65 range quicker and quicker. And eventually they leave the workforce because they retire. And that's kind of, I think, the biggest contributor that we're facing and why all of a sudden this shortage has come up. You know, it came from a different time where, you know, maybe there was a stigma attached to it. But there were plenty of people in the industry and they've remained in the industry. But as I mentioned before, there's this new governmental rule, this clearinghouse that the government's put out there. It's actively taking existing drivers out of the driver pool. Now, granted, that is for reasons, you know, such as drug offenses, things like that, but that it takes them out for a substantial period of time to the point where if somebody were to get in trouble for a drug-related charge, you know, I think that they're out for 5 years at this point, and that just limits the pool even further. I think that the other piece of this is that you know, we live in a society now where, and I'm a product of that, you know, everybody's always been told, I got to go to college, you got to go to college, you got to go to college. And, you know, you think about the individuals that are going to school right now, incurring mountains of debt, and that's national news and topic of all conversations. And then there's not necessarily a job in the field that they're looking for, or any field, that's going to sustain the amount of debt that they've accumulated over the time that they were in school. The reality of the situation is we have people, now there are rules, obviously, age and some level of driving experience, but we have drivers that can make north of $85,000 in their first year driving for us. And that is something that people don't think of. They think that I'm going to go drive a truck, I'm going to be on the road, I'm never going to get to shower, I'm going to be dirty, it's stinky, it's terrible hours, and I don't get paid very much, which is actually not the case at all. So I think that not just in the realm of transportation or trucking, in the realm of manufacturing and logistics work and warehousing work, all things that we do here at G&D, but you know, all the other companies as well, you've got a workforce that thinks that I've got to go get a degree. And then when they get a degree, they don't necessarily think that they would think moving into a role like that is going to be a step down from what they've had. And that's kind of the mentality that's driven a difficult scenario for employers across the country, I think.
So then that's where recruiting comes into play. And what are you going to do? What is going to be done? Maybe not just you, but just in general, how do you go about doing that? I mean, you outlined many different reasons why people should join the force just now, but how do you get that word out there to the point where you can see a tangible effect on that recruiting?
Well, that's a very good question and one that everybody's trying to figure out at this point. You know, the instant reaction is, I got to pay people more. And then that creates a chain reaction because, you know, I've experienced it here locally. We had somebody advertising to pay X. We upped the ante on that to pay Y. And now somebody else is upping that to pay Z. And it's creating a bit of a struggle because there is a threshold there that you can't pay. But I think that from a recruiting standpoint, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make things more attractive and make sure that we're making people aware that there is some positivity to some of these roles. I'll give you an example from a trucking perspective. You know, drivers historically have been that over the road guy. He's gone from home for, you know, 3-4 weeks at a time and you get your experience doing that and you do your time. And then eventually you get to a point where you're running lanes in your home every night. That's how it kind of worked historically. Well, now everybody wants to come and they all want to be home daily. I understand that and I can respect that. But the reality is that doesn't necessarily make sense for our business. And, you know, you've got to be out on the road a couple of days a week, if not more. So what do we look at? We look at from a business perspective. How do you make it more attractive? Is there a way to, you know, roll out something along the lines of, like, I'm going to use a bad analogy, but the Pony Express, right? So have a driver run, drop off his load with another driver going another direction, pick up a load and come back and be home at night. You know, those are things that we explore. Obviously, our pay packages are something that we're very focused on right now. In fact, we've just increased pay to our entire driving base. And that's a big topic in the industry right now as well. You can find multiple articles online about, you know, how this is driving that up. And it's rightfully so. These people do a good job and they need to be rewarded for it. But again, there is a threshold on how far you can go and still operate a business at the end of the day. But, you know, I think that from a recruiting standpoint, it really boils down to we work in an industry that historically lies to the drivers. You know, the grass is always greener. Here's a signing bonus of $5,000. The reality is that's $5,000 if XYZ happen, and it has to happen perfectly. Otherwise, you'll never see that money. Or I'm going to pay you X amount per mile. And the reality is there's a bunch of things that play into that. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do that. So I think our approach is more along the lines of just being very honest with what we do. We want to make sure our drivers, you know, I think they need to be compensated for the time that they're working. So rather than just pay them by the mile and then they get held up at a customer and they're not paid while they're sitting there, we come up with creative compensation packages, and we have to communicate that to the workforce to to maybe differentiate ourselves and attract people to our business.
I want to come back to the gas shortage because that was what kind of sparked this whole conversation. What goes into, what extra stuff do you have to do as a driver to be able to be eligible, I should say, to transport gas?
So there is a whole different line of certifications that you've got to have to haul explosives, liquid bulk, all of those type of things are their own certifications. Our company, we do not haul fuel, but we do haul food grade alcohol. So, you know, the ongoing conversation is, you know, these ladies and gentlemen are hauling essentially, whether it's the food grade alcohol or gasoline or fuel, you're hauling a huge bomb on the back of your truck. You know, that it's very, very hazardous material, very flammable material. And, again, you got to have a special certification to do that. The trucks drive differently. You know, your payload reacts differently because it's actually in motion rather than hauling a dry van full of goods. And so it is, it's a completely different world. There are different certifications and different training aspects that go into hauling fuel.
And you mentioned the fact that this shortage is not just going to hit the gasoline industry, but goods and services of many different sizes and shapes, so to speak. So with that being the case, can you expound upon that? Can you talk a little bit about some of the other goods and services you might see affected by this over the summertime?
Well, I think that, you know, retail stores are going to become, they're going to get hit very hard. Again, supply chain is already constrained. Then you add in the fact that you're experiencing pain not only on the trucking side, but let's just start at origin. If there's parts that are being imported or products that are being imported from overseas, your supply chain is broken at the start. There's not enough steamship lines, then they're getting to the ports and there's delays at the ports. From there, you have to have a drayage carrier move that product out of the port, either deliver it in a sea container or transload it. Transloaders are not able to get the support and the workforce to unload those boxes and then reload them on vans. And then we have the downstream effect of then the carriers are not available to move the freight from here to there. So if you think about everything that we're experiencing, I do think that eventually that rolls downstream into the retail market. You're going to pay more for it, but also you have seasonal business as well. So produce season is upon us right now. Produce season always in the transportation industry sucks up capacity because you've got to move it. It's perishable goods. You can't afford to have it sit around and wait, and you can get paid substantially for that. And so the capacity is sucked up into the produce season, and then nobody else has capacity to move their freight. However, they need to sell their product as well. So it's going to be a downstream effect, and I don't think anybody gets away from this unscathed. Ultimately, the consumer is going to bear the most burden because, you know, the companies are going to pass on those costs for product that they can get, and then product you can't get, then that's going to substantially go up as well.
Final question to you, and I'm going to ask you to take out your crystal ball for this one. How long do you see this lasting?
Well, I wish I had a better crystal ball because I'd be in a different role than I am here. But I don't see this is going to last at least through 2021. I would say at least going through best guess, you know, first or second quarter of 2022, assuming something changes. I think the big problem that we have in the supply chain right now is, you know, COVID related, obviously that plays into it. But you know, there are all of this government monies being spent to ensure people are provided an income. And I certainly think that people deserve to be able to make money. But when the need for employees is out there, in fact, I read a radio commercial the other day for the local area here. Peoria is booming. There's not an employer in town that isn't looking for people. And if we're going to continually, you know, compensate people to stay at home, I think until that stops, you can't even start the clock to seeing that recovery coming through as far as the impact of supply chain. You know, specific to the gas question that we started this conversation on, you know, the Southeast is experiencing this right now. We have trucks down there as well, and we have drivers waiting to get fueled up, and, you know, people driving their cars are in the same situation. You know, there hasn't been a lot of focus on this before, but these cyber attacks and these ransomware attacks that we're, you know, we're told is the cause of the fuel shortage, they've been happening in a great clip for better part of the last year and a half. I mean, those attacks have ramped up substantially, and it's never really been a big focus of the government until it starts hitting the government. So now there's obviously an extreme focus on that. So I would say, crystal ball, from the point that we get people back working, whether that be the beginning of the supply chain or the end of the supply chain with, you know, the driver piece of this, until we get that that jump started, I would say that you probably have at least a year to not year and a half recovery to get the supply chain back.